Russian forces continue their attacks on the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv as more and more residents try to escape.
Lots of people, maybe thousands of people, are still in this town, Irpin, because they're too afraid to go out.
And with the number of evacuees climbing towards 2 million, what's it like in Ukraine's western city, Lviv?
The scale of the exodus in Ukraine right now is matched only by the scale of the compassion and the humanitarian effort that is taking place, not just by Ukraine among ordinary Ukrainians, but also by volunteers across Europe and around the world.
And later in the program, the impact Russia's 2014 annexation of Crimea had on those in Ukraine. Today is Monday, March 7th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Now, a quick program note before we begin. 1 week from today, on Monday, March 14th, we're moving the time of our program up 90 minutes, and it'll be broadcasting at 1935 UTC. Russian forces bombarded cities in northern and southern Ukraine Monday, as Ukrainian officials warned Russia may be moving closer to storming Kyiv. Reporter Jan Bochat is near the fighting on the city's outskirts and describes what's taking place.
I'm in Irpin. It's a small town in the outskirts of Kyiv where the Russians are at this exact moment. So a lot of battles are going on there. And here, where I am, they are trying to evacuate the civilians. So the civilians are coming from Irpin to this area here. And then from here, they go to Kyiv. It's very close to the battlefield here where I am. So this is the last checkpoint before the real front line, you know.
Yeah, and what can you tell us about the experience of being there and seeing that? Because over the weekend, there were some horrific images that made the rounds throughout the world of civilians being killed in these humanitarian corridors.
Exactly. I am very close to that place right now, and I am at the place where people who are fleeing that area are coming here to take the buses and leave to Kyiv. So this is where I am, exactly that place, but very close to that place. Right now, the police just arrested two guys. They believe he's Russian or a spy. Very tense at the moment here. Sorry.
No. I mean, where you are is very dangerous. And, you know, with active fighting taking place close by, you know, safety is paramount. And I'm really, you know, wondering, you know, if you can describe for our audience, you know, what people are experiencing as they're trying to get away. As you said, the fighting is so close.
Well, I've seen people coming walking, people in cars, ambulances, old people injured, bleeding, old people really in shock, you know. So they are all coming here in shock, trying to leave this place as fast as they can. But as an Ukrainian parliamentary that is here helping people to leave said, lots of people, maybe thousands of people, are still in this town, Irpin, because they're too afraid to go out. The bombings are, as you heard, are going on. So there's a lot of people inside there trying to reach this point where I am right now. So people are really, really afraid. This is something that people never predict. People here, they tell me they never thought a war would come to Kyiv. You know, Ukraine is in a war for almost 8 years now, but most of the conflict is happening in the east. It's far from here. People never, ever believed that the war would come here again, you know. So there's a lot of fear. That's what I can tell you. Right now, I'm in front of a big checkpoint. There are buses, ambulances, lots of people around, police, soldiers, some volunteers giving water and giving tea to the people that are arriving here. And the volume of people arriving here, it gets smaller now. In the morning, there was way more people coming.
Jan Bochant is reporting for VOA from the city of Irpin, just outside of Kyiv. Russia has skipped a hearing at the United Nations top court into a legal bid by Kyiv to halt Moscow's devastating invasion of Ukraine. AP correspondent Charles Deledesma has more.
A row of seats reserved for Russian lawyers at the International Court of Justice was empty as the hearing opened. The courts scheduled 2 days of hearings into Ukraine's request for its judges to order Russia to halt its invasion. A decision is expected on the request within days, though it remains to be seen if Russia would abide by any order the court might issue. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Police detained more than 5,000 people on Sunday at Russia-wide protests against President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, and that's according to an independent protest monitoring group. Reuters' Chris Dignam has that story.
Video obtained by Reuters showed dozens of protesters in Yekaterinburg being detained on Sunday, and one protester there was shown being beaten with a baton and kicked on the ground by police in riot gear. The video showed numerous protesters, some elderly, being escorted onto buses by security forces. Russia's Interior Ministry said earlier that police had detained around 3,500 people, including 1,700 in Moscow, 750 in St. Petersburg, and 1,061 in other cities. The Interior Ministry also said 5,200 people had taken part in the protests. Some Russian state-controlled media carried short reports about Sunday's protests, but they did not feature high in news bulletins. The last Russian protests with a similar number of arrests were in January of last year, when thousands demanded the release of opposition leader Alexei Navalny after he was arrested upon returning from Germany, where he had been recovering from being poisoned with a nerve agent. Navalny had called for anti-war protests on Sunday across Russia and the rest of the world. Protesters gathered at Parliament Square in London on Sunday and outside the White House in Washington, D.C., as well as in Mexico City, New Delhi, Istanbul, Budapest, Belgrade, and Brussels. And residents of some Ukrainian towns and cities occupied by Russian forces also took to the streets in protest.
Chris Dignam of Reuters News. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. A Russian Defense Ministry statement said that for humanitarian purposes, Russian forces would declare a regime of silence beginning on Monday to open corridors for people to leave Kyiv, Kharkiv, Sumy, and Mariupol. Now, some of the corridors would have people going to Russia or Russian ally Belarus. The statement added that the move was in response to a direct request from French President Emmanuel Macron to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Ukrainian officials rejected Russia's plan, and in particular, evacuation paths that would send people to Russia and Belarus. On Monday, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights recorded 1,207 civilian casualties in the countries. That stemmed from 406 people being killed and 801 being injured. In the city of Lviv in western Ukraine, it continues to be a major destination for those transiting to safety. And recently, I spoke with Economist correspondent Richard Enzer, and he described to me what he was seeing.
Lviv is experiencing something right now that I've never seen before, and not many places in the world have seen before. We had, you know, the first million refugees come, and now we're well into the second million. Figures today from the United Nations suggest 1.7 million refugees just in the space of 10 or 11 days have left Ukraine. That is a bigger refugee flow already in this war than any year in Europe since 1945. That is the level of historic scale that we need to be talking about right here. Lviv is at the center of this journey for so many people. Some people are staying here, staying put in Lviv, trying to cool their heels for a little while, decide the next move. Some people are just heading straight through, but of course it's a city that represents safety for a lot of people, but for other people, it's not safe enough, and they want to continue their journey towards Europe.
What kind of impact is that kind of traffic having on the city? Because there has been video, you know, circulating around the world of people sometimes waiting days before they're able to continue their journey on.
That's right. Lviv is a city transformed right now. You can see that just taking a walk around the town. It's filling up in a tremendous way. The streets are very full and noisy. Cafes and restaurants are humming. Supermarket shelves are empty by the end of the day, almost without exception. This is a city that has too many people compared to what it was designed to be able to handle. And of course, at the train station, it's where the greatest chaos of all is taking place, because that's the where you can get a ticket out of the country towards safety, towards NATO territory, towards potentially a new life for many people. And that's exactly what a lot of people are searching for right now.
You mentioned that by the end of the day, supermarket shelves are empty. What can you tell us about what's being done to get things that people need there on a daily basis?
The scale of the exodus in Ukraine right now is matched only by the scale of the compassion and the humanitarian effort that is taking place, not just by Ukraine among ordinary Ukrainians, but also by volunteers across Europe and around the world. We are seeing huge amounts of aid in the forms of clothing, medicine, food, crossing the border from Poland, Slovakia, and other countries, coming into cities like Lviv, volunteers standing around at the train station with information, hot food, soup, singing carols, offering transport to people. This is the without that effort, this would be a much greater humanitarian catastrophe. And that level of grassroots organizing and volunteerism really represents the best of Europe and Ukraine right now, and has done an enormous amount to reduce the harm of this Russian invasion.
You've been in Kyiv before, you know the country, but what has struck you the most in terms of watching what's transpiring?
Two thoughts come to my mind. Number one, this is the kind of war that everyone never imagined Europe would need to see again. It's the kind of war our grandparents heard about and would tell us about. It's something we saw in history books, a 19th century style war of conquest. And the shock of seeing that unfold is the first thing that really struck me. But the second thing, and the more lasting impact on me, has been watching ordinary Ukrainians exhibit a level of bravery that I didn't think any populace could be capable of. I'm talking about ordinary civilians standing in front of tanks with no arms of their own, knowing that their life could be lost in the next moment, but completely unafraid of such a risk, with their minds totally centered on this idea of protecting their country and fighting for the freedom and democracy that Ukraine has scrambled to have after so many years. And that starts from the top with the president, Volodymyr Zelensky, risking his life, walking around in the streets of Kyiv, uploading selfies to Facebook. A fearless leader worthy of the moment in everyone's opinion, but also right down to the villages and residents of Ukrainian cities. It is from top to bottom. An exhibit in heroism that I've never seen before.
Richard Ansor is a correspondent with The Economist, speaking to us from Lviv, Ukraine. Thank you.
Thank you. Anytime.
Henry Ridgewell picks up things from here on Poland's side of the border.
A surreal soundtrack greets the sea of humanity fleeing Ukraine, a pianist with a message of peace. A momentary distraction from the misery unleashed by Russia's invasion. More than 1 million Ukrainians have fled to Poland since the invasion, by far the highest of any country. And they have been largely embraced by their European neighbours. Most new arrivals are bused to reception centres away from the frontier. Some have family or friends in Poland where they can stay. But many have nowhere to go. They are given beds in shelters like this one, a school in the nearby town of Przemyśl, now entirely given over to refugees. It is remarkable how efficiently Poland has managed to absorb the huge number of refugees arriving over its borders so far. The question is how long that can continue, as tens of thousands of refugees continue to arrive every day. Yevgenia has just arrived here with three of her four children. My husband is in Ukraine, she says. They didn't let him leave. And also my older son. He's 18. He also had to sign up to the army. So we're separated. Volunteers come to us and offer us opportunities where we can go, where there is work. We want to work so we're not dependent on someone else, so we can be useful for something. The school's head teacher, Malgorzata Zioba, oversees the shelter. and now has hundreds of refugees under her care. She says the worst moments are when, for example, a minibus arrives at night and we take in babies that are 4 or 5 months old. It is really very emotional, and I think not everyone is suited to cope with that. We can do it because we are strong. We don't know for how long. As long as we have the strength, we will help. Next door, a cultural centre has been transformed into a temporary shelter. They have been overwhelmed with donations from local residents and businesses. Janusz Zapatoczy, a local politician who is helping at the shelter, says at first the refugees are shocked. They want to shout. They want to talk out loud what they experienced, what they went through, what their escape was like. And then slowly they calm down and get used to the new reality that they have to go on living. The historical bonds run deep across this border. At the cathedral of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church in Przemyśl, a prayer service was held Sunday morning for the people of Ukraine. The service was broadcast live across Poland. Many Ukrainian refugees say they hope to return home within weeks, that this dizzying upheaval will soon be over. But as they see the images of death and destruction in the land they left behind, that hope is draining away. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Przemyśl, Poland.
Since 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea and fighting erupted in the Donbas region, the conflict has forced people from their homes as well as reshaped their worldviews. Since 2020, Victoria Serreta has been a senior research fellow at the Institute of Ethnology of the National Academy of Sciences of Ukraine and is also continuing her research at the Imre Kertész College Jena in Germany. I spoke with her earlier today and began the conversation by asking how earlier fighting in Ukraine affected people's national identity.
It was a big shock for Ukrainian society and made a big impact on the Ukrainian society. For a moment, society had to take a breath and rethink many issues and who belongs to us, who we are, why this is happening to us. So these things were very intensively discussed on everyday level in many families. And from my previous research, because as a sociologist, I conducted a lot of in-depth interviews in very different parts of the country and countryside.
Oh, what did your research show?
Typically, Ukrainians were quite to distance themselves from discussion of historical past or memories, some ethnic issues. And this conflict really pushed them to rethink situation. But when we look at the sociological surveys, and we also see the very similar situation when we talk personally and conduct interviews, we observe a very interesting phenomenon because in academic literature, we have this argument that typically war or territorial conflict creates incentive for the unity against the rivals, and this provokes a strong nationalistic response among the citizenry. But in my research, shows that actually Russia's annexation of Crimea and its military operation in Donbas have rekindled Ukrainian nationalism, but very unexpectedly.
So then, what were your findings?
So, contrary to the picture described by Russian propaganda back then and now in Russian media, Euromaidan and other tragic events had actually positive impact on strengthening political view of Ukrainian nation and downplayed an ethnocentric attitude. For example, such marker as importance to speak Ukrainian lost its significance if we compare data before the conflict and after the conflict. And we also see very interesting picture that more markers which would strengthen or emphasize importance of citizenship practices for Ukrainian identity, such as being useful for the society or participate actively in a civic life, became the key markers with the help of which people were describing themselves.
So taking a look at what you researched in the past, how do you see current events?
It's constantly portrayed as some ethnic conflict, but it's not in any sense ethnic conflict for Ukrainians. This is more the difference in political systems, the democracy, the possibility to express themselves.
Victoria Sereda is currently at the Imre Kurzweil College Jena in Germany. And finally, Russia's shelling of a TV tower in Kyiv killed a Ukrainian cameraman. His death highlights the danger journalists face as Russia continues its invasion of Ukraine. Anna Rice narrates this story to round us out.
On March 1st, the sound of Russian missile strike on a TV tower in Kyiv could be heard over Ukraine's capital. Later, local police pulled the bodies from the tower, including the body of Yevgeny Sakun, a cameraman who worked for live TV. His body had a press pass in the pocket.
He was involved in the news show crew of live TV, together with the TV crews of other large newsrooms on national Ukrainian TV.
His colleagues say that during military actions, journalists work mostly on a volunteer basis.
Four of our main media groups have united and we're doing joint coverage of the whole of Ukraine. So the story of all journalists is not the story of particular editorial task anymore or particular channel. It's a story of working together in the media sphere in order to give viewers a clear image that reflects the facts. We don't yet know whether Sakun was working or was at the tower for another reason.
Sakun's family has also been missing since the cameraman's death. Four other bodies were also found at the tower. It's not yet clear if the other victims were his colleagues, family, or visitors.
We had to get in touch with his relatives, but we can't reach anyone. And there is no one at the apartment where he lived. But because of the ongoing war, many people had to evacuate, so there is hope his relatives and close ones are alive.
The 49-year-old was a Kyiv native. His colleagues say he was very sociable, kind, and professional. For the National Union of Journalists of Ukraine, Sakun's death is a direct attack on freedom.
This is an evident direct attack on the freedom of speech. The information about his death is a powerful message that creates fear and anxiety for all Ukrainian journalists. We all realize any one of us could have been in his place, any Ukrainian journalist.
The Committee to Protect Journalists issued this statement.
We are deeply saddened by the death of Ukrainian journalist Yevgeny Sakun, who was killed in a reckless Russian attack on civilian infrastructure in Kyiv. All parties to the conflict must protect local and international journalists and stop targeting media facilities and equipment.
Besides Sakun, the TV tower attack killed four others and wounded five. For Irina Matvichuk, NRI's VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. Don't forget to stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on your favorite social media platform. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.